This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The Marketplace lead is the arrest of a guy accused of helping to crash the stock market 5 years ago. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. May 6th, 2010, 2:42 p.m. Wall Street time, the Dow began a sickening slide of more than 1,000 points in just a matter of minutes. By shortly after 3 p.m., prices had largely recovered. What came to be known as the flash crash freaked everybody out and led to new circuit breakers built into markets. A postmortem later showed that a single big trade by a financial firm may have precipitated this, but that high-frequency traders made things worse. With that background, here's the news. Authorities in London have now arrested a high-frequency trader, 36-year-old Navinder Singh Sarraw, for allegedly trying to manipulate the market during the flash crash, perhaps single-handedly using commercially available software. He's due to appear before a judge today, ahead of possible extradition to the U.S. Legal experts say charges of market manipulation are extremely rare and tough to prove. The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker joins us now from London. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, David.
Give me a sense of what the accusation is here involving Navinder Sarraw. What is he accused of doing?
It's essentially making money by putting in large volumes of sell orders that were, if you like, a safe distance away from the actual market price so that he wouldn't actually have to execute those orders, but they would be sufficiently visible that the rest of the market would think that that was an indication of potential supply. And that had the effect of driving the price down. And he's then alleged to have managed to use that temporary dip to make some money, according to the allegations from the American authorities, a total of in excess of $40 million.
If these accusations prove true, it wasn't just this one gentleman who shook the global markets on that fateful day in 2010, but the allegation is it played a role.
There undoubtedly were other factors involved, and people have suggested the automatic responses of various computer trading algorithms. There was even suggestions of fat finger syndrome, perhaps having been an aspect of it. But certainly what the Department of Justice and the Commodities and Futures Trading Commission say is that Mr. Sarraw's conduct was a factor. And I should emphasize that he does deny doing anything wrong.
One imagines a person with the clout to shake the global markets is working out of a posh address in the financial district of London. Is that what we have here?
Well, apparently not. It's really been striking for the media coverage in the UK that the official address, at least, is a very modest, semi-detached house not very far from Heathrow Airport. Now, he may well have been working out of other addresses as well, and Dubai has been one suggestion, but certainly he does not conform to the stereotype of the big financial trader who is able to move the markets.
The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker in London. Andrew, thank you.
My pleasure, David.
The phrase Andrew used, the fat finger, refers to an accidental transaction when traders hit the key next to the key they wanted and mayhem ensues. Now let's check the numbers. The FT 100 in London, that index down 0.2% now. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 3-4% range. Now in Japan, the Nikkei index closed above the 20,000 benchmark for the first time since the year 2000. Japan's weak currency is helping Japanese companies that sell products to the rest of the world that drove up the markets there. Crude oil using the Texas benchmark is above $56 a barrel on a drop of 0.9% this morning. Where I live in New Jersey, the greeting tends to be, how you doing? One useful way to answer the well-being question is to consult the new statistical analysis out this morning called Geographies of Opportunity. It looks at statistics on health, education, and what we earn, and produces what's called a Human Development Index. As the campaign gears up, today's report offers a breakdown by congressional district in the U.S. The report is compiled by an outfit called Measure of America, and its co-director, Kristen Lewis, joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
So there's so much here, but just give us a taste. For instance, if you're looking at top congressional districts using your measure versus bottom, where do you find some of these?
Well, interestingly, the highest and lowest ranking districts are both in one state, California. So topping the charts is California's 18th district. It's a Bay Area district that includes Silicon Valley. And at the very bottom is California's 21st district, which includes parts of Bakersfield and the Central Valley. So this area is an agricultural powerhouse that feeds the whole country, but hundreds of thousands of people living there have to rely on food stamps to put food on their own tables.
But I see this pattern elsewhere in the data. If you're looking at divergence, gaps between wealth and lack thereof, often you see more striking differences within states as opposed to among states.
Yes, that's definitely true. If you look at the state of Virginia, you have Congressional Districts 8 and Congressional Districts 9. They are worlds apart, though, even though they're in the same state. So in the 9th district, people are only living about 75 and a half years, whereas in the 8th district, they're living 83.5 years. They're earning twice as much in District 8 as they are in District 9.
Now, here's something else that stopped traffic for me. The higher the proportion of foreign-born residents in a congressional district, the longer people live in the district?
Yeah, that was something that was very striking to us as well. Foreign-born Latinos live much longer than native-born Latinos, and Latinos overall live longer than whites. Even though these groups, among Latinos, for instance, have lower educational outcomes and earn less money, they are living longer. And there are various theories for that. One quite persuasive one is this idea that social cohesion, family support, and so forth kind of buffer the effects of poverty and create better health outcomes.
This new ranking of well-being by congressional district is called Geographies of Opportunity. Kristen Lewis is co-director of Measure of America. Kristen, thank you.
Thanks, David. It's been great to talk with you.
We'll have links to that new Measure of America report at marketplace.org later this morning. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.